Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida lawmakers say it's time to stop kicking gaming decisions down the road.
We've already deferred this once. As you might know, that I chaired a committee a few years ago, and we went around the state and we had hearings.
Also tonight, House lawmakers have sent three pieces of drug legislation to the floor, but a move combining two into one bill has some lawmakers upset.
And I have to say, this combination of two bills puts me between a rock and a hard place.
We'll also get into the battle against cameras at intersections and for cameras on police officers, as well as the latest in the drive to change the retirement system for state government workers. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day three of the sixth week in the Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida Senate took its turn talking gaming today. Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers in the Senate Regulated Industries Committee passed a measure that would ratify a gambling agreement between Florida and the Seminole Indian Tribe, as well as a larger gaming measure.
Six Florida counties took up a significant chunk of the committee's gaming discussions Wednesday. The six counties have held referendum votes supporting a move to allow slot machines at paramutuals in their communities. But committee chair Rob Bradley says that could violate the proposed agreement with the tribe. Under the current compact proposal, Bradley says only a select few paramutuals could offer slots without violating the exclusivity agreement.
The proposed compact permits one additional paramutual location in Miami-Dade and one additional paramutual location in Palm Beach, with each additional facility permitted to phase in during a three-year period, 750 slot machines and 750 video racing terminals with a $5 bet limit.
Bradley says if slot machines are expanded to paramutuals beyond those listed in the compact, the $3 billion the state is expected to take in through revenue sharing over the next 7 years would be significantly cut. But Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell says it doesn't make sense to treat paramutuals differently, and she says the current proposal uses the compact to pick winners and losers. She has a different idea.
It requires that the compact is deemed ratified if the following two amendments are made to the compact. The compact must be amended to provide that revenue sharing is not impacted if the legislature approves slot machines at any of existing facilities in counties that have approved slot machines by referendum as of January 1st, 2016. And it removes the proposed language dealing with the new slot license for Palm Beach and Miami-Dade counties.
Under Stargell's proposal, those counties that have held referendums would be able to approach the legislature at a later date to request slot machine licenses. But some, like Naples Republican Senator Garrett Richter, say they'd rather resolve the issue now.
We've already deferred this once. As you might know, that I chaired a committee a few years ago, and we went around the state, and we had hearings, and we met in four corners of the state, and we had all kinds of public hearings right here in this room, and we debated these issues, we debated a commission, we debated the slots, we debated it all, and at the end of the day, it was decided to kick the can down the road to a future legislature, and this is the future legislature.
And committee members say a measure by Stewart Republican Senator Joe Negron better addresses that. Lawmakers voted against Stargell's amendment and looked to the Negron amendment instead. The provision makes changes in the larger gaming bill rather than the compact ratification measure.
The first thing it does is it recognizes all prior slot machines where there has been a referenda and respects the right for a new referendum to be made to authorize slot machines. It authorizes a new slot machine license in Miami-Dade County, which, to be clear, is already included in the compact, so that is the same.
Negron says that means paramutuals like Creek Entertainment in Gretna would be given slot licenses. The change also decouples greyhound and horse racing from other gambling activities at paramutuals. But Bradley warns the move could impact revenue sharing with the tribe.
There's so many moving parts because it depends on how many slot licenses you have. Ms. Baker would get into the details of all these as to whether you offset revenue, less tribe revenue, more slot revenue.
The amendment passed. Lawmakers also passed a provision that would link the gaming bill and compact ratification measure, stipulating that one cannot pass without the other. But the Senate committee stopped short of following the House procedure, which put both provisions under one bill. Without that, some are worried about what could happen if both measures make it to Governor Rick Scott's desk, but he only signs one and chooses to veto the other. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The House Health and Human Services Committee sent two measures to the floor that would have been unthinkable just a few years ago. Nick Evans reports the full House will now consider a needle exchange pilot program and a new medical marijuana proposal.
The House's main health care panel ran something of a legislative marathon Wednesday.
Thank you very much. Folks, welcome to Health and Human Services. I can only assume that since most of you appear to be new, you're here for the Renner bill.
They weren't there for the Renner bill. That was Committee Chair Jason Broder, and the Sanford Republicans squeezed 20 different bills into a three-hour meeting. One of the issues taking center stage was a medical marijuana measure, Frankensteining together two different provisions. Don't believe me?
Next up, PCS-SMB for CS for CS for House Bill 307 and House Bill 1313.
According to the bill's sponsor, Shalimar Republican Matt Gaetz, the move is entirely within House rules. But Stewart Republican Gail Harrell still doesn't like the monstrosity.
You know, so if we're going to look at expanding the right to try to other, quote, drugs out there, why don't we open it up to meth, to cocaine, to heroin? So I have a real problem with putting these two bills together.
The first part of the new measure is the one Harrell opposes, granting terminal patients access to full potency medical marijuana.
The proposed substitute before the committee removes the barrier between dying people, truly dying people, and well-tested, well-regulated, properly labeled, physician-ordered medical cannabis.
Gaetz explains the second part makes a number of alterations to Florida's existing medical cannabis architecture.
Stronger testing protocols, 24-hour security, limited retail hours, more rigorous inspections, patient ID cards, express local control, seed-to-sale tracking, reliable labeling as well.
In addition, the bill lays out a plan for more licenses. Once there are 250,000 qualified patients, the Department of Health will award three more. But this time they'll do it a bit differently.
I've gotten feedback that 30 years ago there may have been predatory lending practices which necessarily disadvantaged African Americans who might otherwise be interested in this venture. So we take the position in this bill that for any future licensures that become necessary as a result of demand, we will eliminate the 30-year nurseryman requirement on a going-forward basis, and I want to thank the members who've provided me that important feedback.
Meanwhile, South Florida Democrats have spent years lobbying for a needle exchange pilot program in Miami-Dade County. Despite finding a receptive audience in the Senate, the measure has languished in the House. Here's Sunrise Democratic Representative Katie Edwards.
The bill authorizes University of Miami and its affiliates to establish a needle and syringe exchange pilot program in Miami-Dade County to prevent the transmission of HIV, AIDS, and other blood-borne diseases spread by intravenous drug users, their sexual partners, and offspring.
But now that proposal moves to the House floor. The companion bill in the Senate is on the floor as well. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Well, the Florida winners of a portion of the nation's largest ever lottery jackpot came forward today, setting up what they're calling the Nickel 95 Trust. Husband and wife winners David Kaltschmidt and Maureen Smith of Melbourne Beach claimed their share of the $1.5 billion Powerball jackpot that was drawn just over a month ago. Split three ways, the couple won $528.7 million, taking a lump sum payment. They'll get just over $325 million before taxes. The
ticket was purchased at a Publix grocery store in Melbourne Beach. Smith says she's used the same numbers for many years, even though she doesn't play the lottery regularly. The couple says they really don't know how they're going to spend the money, but they do have some immediate needs. Kohlschmidt and Smith say they plan to remain living in Melbourne Beach for now. Across Florida, players spent more than $280 million on Powerball tickets in the weeks leading up to the historic jackpot. $114 million was transferred to the state's Educational Enhancement Trust Fund. The Florida winners are sharing the jackpot with two other winners from Tennessee and California. Still to come on Capitol Report, advocates argue that having interactions between police officers and citizens caught on camera can help minimize misunderstandings.
For the training that officers have to go through every year, part of that training will now include detecting persons with autism and dealing with persons with autism.
A widowed mom begs Florida lawmakers to keep red light cameras at the state's more dangerous intersections.
She will never know her father. It is my job to advocate for safer laws.
And as the House continues to move forward on its pension reform package, opposition continues to mount.
We understand that this has been billed as kind of a minor change, as just a little tweak. It's anything but. It's a major change. And it's a change at the end of the day, it's bad for the new hires, and it's bad for the taxpayers.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Caught on cell phone videos and magnified by social media, law enforcement incidents are dominating the news. Some Florida lawmakers are working on a host of measures to rebuild the relationship between police and the public. Kate Payne has that story.
Across the country, there can be violent, sometimes fatal interactions between police and the public. Through cell phone videos and dash cam footage, sometimes we get a glimpse of these incidents. Activists say these cameras can shape behavior and save lives. Some Florida jurisdictions are quick to invest in body cams, but haven't established guidelines on how to use them and where to store the camera footage. Fort Lauderdale Senator Chris Smith wants to change that.
If you're going to have body cameras on officers, you should come up with maintenance and storage procedures. If officers are going to wear cameras, you need to have a procedure of who's actually going to wear the camera.
But critics say body cams are not a magic wand. Shifting behavior requires education and training as well. Another bill sponsored by Senator Smith could help officers interact with people on the autism spectrum. Here's Smith again.
For the training that officers have to go through every year, part of that training will now include detecting persons with autism and dealing with persons with autism.
Some state lawmakers want to build on autism awareness, but they're taking it a step further. When people on the autism spectrum are being interviewed by law enforcement, a psychologist or other professional should be there to help. That's according to Senator Jeremy Ring of Margate and Representative Bill Hager of Boca Raton. Hager says the nature of autism can make it difficult for people to communicate, especially in stressful situations.
And that's driven by the characteristics of autism itself. And those characteristics known to everybody in this room are those of repetitive behavior, those of difficulty with verbal communications, those of difficulty with nonverbal communication.
Under the bill, officers should make every attempt to include a professional in the interview, but if they don't, it won't be held against them. The officers can't be sued, and the testimony can still be used in a court of law. But lawmakers in both chambers say, if there are no consequences, what's the point? Senator Rob Bradley of Orange Park is one of those dissenters.
I don't want this to be used as a sword to avoid statements being put into evidence that are, that imply guilt or state guilt on the part of somebody making those statements, but then they get suppressed by virtue of this statute, or it even colors the judge's view of whether they should be suppressed or not.
Despite concerns, both bills continue to move forward. Other lawmakers want to make driving while deaf safer. Getting pulled over can be stressful for anyone, but for the deaf and hard of hearing, miscommunication with police is a real concern. Representative Vic Torres of Orlando wants to add a symbol on driver's licenses to indicate if the person is deaf or hard of hearing. June McMahon represents the Florida Association of the Deaf. Here she is speaking through an interpreter.
If you look on the news, there are so many problems dealing with the police, even with people who aren't deaf. So you can imagine if you add the communication issue on top of that, it can escalate to something more serious.
The bill has one more committee stop Thursday before heading to the House floor, but the Senate version has not had a single hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
And while we're talking about cameras and law enforcement, members of the House Appropriations Committee faced a tough decision when a widow and traffic safety activist begged them not to repeal a red light camera law named after her deceased husband. We get more on that from Jim Ash.
In the legislature, red light cameras blur traditional partisan and geographic lines. But for Melissa Wandel, they're intensely personal. In October 2003, she was driving with her husband Mark when a car ran a red light near State Road 70 and Terra Boulevard in Manatee County. Mark was killed. Melissa was 9 months pregnant. Wandel calmly reminded the committee they were about to undo a decade's worth of her hard work.
We have completely forgotten the reason why this bill was enacted in the first place. Mark Wandel. The red light safety cameras have a name. It's the Mark Wandel Traffic Safety Act. And somebody had to die in order to implement this safety act.
Wandel said she wasn't asking for sympathy, just their vote.
I could not prevent my husband from dying that night. We were 9 months pregnant with our daughter. She was born 2 weeks later, and she will never know her father. It is my job to advocate for safer laws.
But in the end, the committee voted 15-12 to repeal the 2010 law. Wandel has several forces working against her. Republican Frank Artiles of Miami, the bill's sponsor, is framing the argument in economic terms.
Red light cameras are a backdoor tax. 416 cities, 67 counties. The purpose of this bill is to repeal the 2010 bill that allows cities and counties to basically tax their constituency and say it's about safety, when in reality the DHS-MV report says it's not about safety, it's about money.
Red light cameras are expensive for the drivers who get a $158 ticket and the communities that install them. Vendors charge nearly $5,000 per month for each red light camera, and many of them lose money. And critics argue red light cameras aren't working. According to a study released last year, there were 3,453 crashes at red light camera intersections before they were installed, and 3,959 after. Here's Paul Henry, a former police officer and activist for the conservative Liberty First Network.
I've worked these crashes. I worked over 1,000 crashes here in Florida. I know what causes a red light violation crash. Two things, distraction and impairment. There's not a camera on this planet. It's going to stop either one of those.
But Wandel and others argue red light cameras change driving behavior and save lives. The Florida police chiefs support red light cameras, and so does the Florida League of Cities. FLC lobbyist Casey Cook says the crash statistics are misleading.
Vehicle miles traveled are up 5% statewide from 2011 to 2014. That's important because what you should remember is that more drivers on the road equals more crashes.
Democrat Janet Cruz of Tampa said she pored over the studies, pro and con, and couldn't make up her mind. Then she considered her own track record.
I personally was a chronic yellow light runner. I ran yellow lights all the time, I'm telling you. But once red light cameras went into my city in Tampa, it really curtailed or changed my behavior.
But Democrats on the committee didn't vote in lockstep. Daryl Roussan noted that Mayor Rick Kreisman unplugged St. Petersburg's 22 red light cameras after they stopped making money. And after that, the silence was deafening, Roussan said.
There's yet been any outcry from the citizens to put them back in. So I'm voting up on this bill today until someone shows me that there is further outcry from the residents and the citizens I represent.
The bill goes next to the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Three child care bills are moving in the House. As Ashley Tressel reports, one would tighten requirements for child care workers.
Representative Charles McBurney wants more screening for child care personnel. His bill would stop the Department of Children and Families from granting exemptions for sex offenders or felons.
It will make it less burdensome for DCF to implement the federal law's new screening requirements by having the same standard for all child care personnel.
Another bill sponsored by Representative Ray Rodriguez would allow parents who are unable to take care of their children to choose a temporary guardian. Rodriguez says this will help parents who lose custody for reasons other than abuse.
The number one indicator within our county is a family member, typically it's a single parent, loses their job. And then when they lose their job, they lose their housing. And so they're in trouble, they're in crisis, but they're not at a point where they have abused, abandoned, or neglected their child. They just need some help.
The measure does not apply to children in foster care. A third bill that would further pass child welfare reform adds a quality rating system for both group and foster homes. Representative Gail Harrell says she wants nothing but the best for Florida children.
We don't want substandard placements for our children. We want quality, and this is the next step to achieve it. We ask for your support.
Co-sponsor Representative Neil Comby says they are focused on getting children out of the welfare system and back in a safe environment. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ashley Tressel.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Tomorrow's Capitol agenda is a busy one, and Ronald J. Eben has a preview.
At 8 o'clock, the House Economic Affairs Committee considers a number of bills, including one that revises the laws regarding the operation of bicycles, including the passing of vehicles and careless driving. There's a measure that authorizes the use of international symbols for the deaf and hard of hearing to be exhibited on driver's licenses or other identification cards. There's the Reemployment Assistance Act that authorizes the Department of Economic Opportunity to employ law enforcement officers to investigate incidents of fraud regarding state unemployment assistance. The Senate Democratic Caucus meets at 8:45. The House Judiciary Committee meets at 9 to consider bills dealing with the installation of tracking devices. There's also a bill that would require the placement of an interlock device for a specified period for a first DUI conviction. Also up for consideration is repeal of a bill still on the books that prohibits unmarried men and women from living together. The Senate goes into session at 10 o'clock, the House at 1 p.m. And those are some of the legislative agenda highlights for Thursday, February 18th. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally tonight, a bill seeking to reform Florida's retirement system is now heading to the House floor despite continued opposition. Sasha Cordner reports.
Among the changes the pension reform proposal makes, North Fort Myers Republican Representative Matt Caldwell says one area is perhaps the most important part of his bill.
It establishes a survivor benefit for members of the investment plan who are killed in the line of duty, and it mirrors that benefit which is afforded members of the pension side of the plan. Additionally, it makes retroactive that benefit to every member of the investment plan who has died since the inception of the investment plan in 2002.
The Florida retirement system has two main options for employees to choose from: the defined benefit plan, also known as the traditional pension plan, the more popular option, and the defined contribution plan, also called a 401k style investment plan. The pension plan is currently the default for employees who haven't selected a retirement option, and Caldwell's most controversial provision would change that default to the investment plan for new hires, extending the time for employees to make that choice from 6 months to 9 months. Caldwell argues while the investment plan allows employees to vest after 1 year, the pension plan takes several years for that to happen.
Of the folks that are in our pension plan, 60% don't vest. So just to understand, we are putting contributions in for all of those folks that are participating right now in a pension, and they leave and walk away with nothing. We're keeping that money rather than letting them take it with them.
About 20 people recently opposed his proposal because of that change, including Linda Edson, representing Florida Retired Educators Association.
Research has shown, the little bit I've read, that the defined contribution plans statistically are lower return value than it is a defined benefit plan. Why not get the best for your buck for our people?
Rocco Salvatore, representing Florida professional firefighters, is also against the default change.
I'm not going to stand here and tell you that this bill is going to destroy the system. We believe the change to the default is unnecessary, though, however, and could result in a new cost to individuals who now default into that investment plan, realize several years later that was not their intent. Then they would have to essentially buy their way back into the pension plan, where that individual would not currently have to do that.
House Democratic Leader Mark Pafford doesn't like the default provision either, comparing it to a toilet.
Because I think once you hit that handle, you're flushing away all the good that's still left in what we have here as a pension system. And we flush it away. And we flush away a lot of dignity that we provide our public servants.
In Miami Beach, Democratic Representative David Richardson says changing the default to the less popular retirement option makes no sense.
Why would we say that we're going to change the choice and default people into a plan that only one out of four would choose when they don't make a choice? But it's clearly an effort to reduce participation in the plan.
But Caldwell doesn't fully agree with those stats.
The folks that default to the pension plan, about 75% of members. We don't know what percentage are doing that just because they actively wanted to be there, and by not making a choice, they know they would go. And if we make this change, we will find out what that statistic is, and it may very well be that still 75% of members go to the pension plan.
And he says the death benefits provision is also much better than the Senate standalone bill.
I do want to mention the Senate bills do touch on in-line of duty death benefit for special risk members. We actually are giving that to everyone who participates in the FRS in the plan before you. So if you're a teacher, if you're a clerk at the front office and you die in the line of duty, you would be included in the plan here. And that's a group of people that are actually left out in the Senate bills that are before you.
And the House Appropriations Committee passed the pension reform package 16-9 along party lines with Democrats opposed. Last week, the Senate voted unanimously on its bill providing benefits for the surviving spouse of first responders who have died in the line of duty. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Ashley Tressel and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.